You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6, China is Africa's largest trade partner. Both Republicans and Democrats suspect Beijing is up to no good. It's invested billions in the continent, and some fear that's left many countries in debt to a new imperial power. So what is China getting for that money? Jen White and her guests answer your questions today at 6 on 1A+. Now, clutter is big business in the United States. There are services that help us clean up and get organized or to deal with all our possessions after we leave them behind. And it's big in pop culture, from shows like Tidying Up with Marie Kondo that make the case for getting rid of things that don't spark joy, to shows like Hoarders that look at clutter when it's taken to the extreme. But those all deal with clutter that we already have. Our next guest says we need to look at the causes of clutter and what leads us to get so many things in the first place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your relationship with clutter and stuff? Do you have a horror story to share, your own, or maybe cleaning up for a relative, a success story? Did you change your attitude about buying stuff to have less clutter in the first place? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer Howard is a Washington, D.C.-based writer and editor. Her latest book is called Clutter, An Untidy History. Jen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be here.
Well, you open the book with a story about your mother and going through her home and her stuff. Can you talk about what you went through and why that inspired you to seek out more of the history of clutter?
Sure. Well, like a lot of us, I found myself actually very suddenly in the position of having to clean out my mother's house after she had a mental and physical breakdown. She went from overnight living in her house that she'd been in for 50 years to not being able to be there at all. It just wasn't safe. So it felt to me as an only child to go in and try to make some sense of everything that she had. You know, I had to deal with her papers, her finances, all the medical care, but then I had this house full of stuff. And I was shocked and overwhelmed by how much stuff my mother had managed to accumulate in all that time. I knew she was not a minimalist, but I didn't realize, until I actually had to deal with everything in there, just how much she had. And that got me interested sort of as a survival mechanism trying to understand what was happening and how my mother, and as it turns out, so many other people, wound up in this really, really difficult situation.
And you dug back into history and you find we're not alone in the United States with clutter and having lots of stuff. But you kind of trace the history here in the U.S. back to Victorian England, when we start to have a different relationship with being able to buy lots of stuff and wanting lots of things. What kind of things did you find out?
Oh, it was fascinating. I could have written multiple books on the Victorians alone. I was hoping I could find a starting point for clutter, like the historical moment when clutter was born. And I couldn't really trace the moment, but there was so much in the Victorian era that resonated for me as a 21st century American, the kind of love of things and the love of having nicely furnished houses and all the stuff we can buy and the message that we get to, you know, that we should be buying things, should be buying more. The Victorians would have been very familiar with all of that. When you look at the Industrial Revolution and, you know, the ability to make more things more quickly and ship them to people, with the rise of cities, with department stores, all these things kind of started to coalesce as I was reading and looking around for me in the Victorian era. And you think about the Crystal Palace, the famous huge glass showcase, basically, of the London Exhibition in 1851. That really became a touchstone for me for this modern phenomenon of clutter. And I really felt it was very, very much an important starting point for that.
I mentioned earlier the TV show Hoarders. There are others that look at, you know, when collecting stuff really goes to an extreme. A big point in your book, though, is those shows sometimes treat the hoarder as this sort of individual pathology. You kind of see it, correct me if I'm wrong, you see it as a symptom of a wider attitude toward consumerism and our desire to have and keep stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, of course, personal choice and personal habits and sometimes mental challenges can really contribute to this problem. But, you know, from the minute we're born, we are steeped in this culture of buy, buy, buy. You know, you think about if you've ever been to a baby shower or that anything, really anything you do in modern life involves, often it seems to involve the message that you should buy something. And that's what you should be doing as a good consumer and all that. And it's very hard for individuals to escape the power of that message. As I said, it starts when we're kids, and we're surrounded by advertising and by big box stores, and now online, e-commerce, Amazon. It's so easy to buy, and as I saw with my mother, I think she got trapped in this web of consumerism, and once you're stuck in it, it can be very, very hard for people to get out of it just through force of individual will alone.
Talking to Jennifer Howard about her book, Clutter, An Untidy History. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like there's a lot of clutter in your life? What leads you to buy stuff, bring you into your home? What challenges do you have when it comes to getting rid of stuff? Do you know someone who you've seen it go pretty far with bordering on hoarding things? What changed? Was there something that made them change their ways? Call in with your thoughts, experiences, and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jennifer, you just mentioned sort of the emotional connection we have with things. And I'm not a hoarder. I kind of go back and forth. I just purged a bunch of kids' drawings from their little. And I go back and forth between, there's a smudge on this paper that a kid might have made. Got to keep it forever, to this ruthless paring down. But I get the emotional investment in a thing. There's a memory connected with why we have it in the first place that I can understand people being reluctant to let go of. Talk about the emotions at the center of this.
That's really at the heart of it. That is what makes it, I think, so hard for so many of us to get rid of things, because we do have personal connections. And, you know, if grandma gave you something, or the little thing you brought back from the sea, your beach trip with the kids, and you feel like you're throwing away the vacation if you throw away the object, it's really hard. And if every object or many of them have that kind of some kind of emotional baggage with them, no wonder it's hard to get rid of them. I mean, if you have to stop and process all those feelings, those memories, it's overwhelming. And it's easy, again, since we are a society that really does value things, we sometimes conflate the thing with the person or the memory, and it's very hard to kind of extricate yourself from that. The kids' artwork, everything your child ever touched is valuable, or feels like it, but it's hard to actually sort of get yourself to do the process of sorting and deciding what's really important, what's enough, and what's too much.
A lot of our efforts, and a lot, I think, businesses make money off of this, they go toward the back end. We have the clutter. We have the stuff. How do we organize it? How do we sort it? How do we purge it? Whatever. What kind of things are you thinking about when it comes to the front end, whether we bring a thing into our house in the first place and how we curate it before it becomes cluttered in the first place?
That's the thing. If you can head it off at the pass, that's the way to go. It's very hard because we're in a society that gives us freebies and sends, everything comes in a bag and a package. And you go to if you go out to a hotel, you come home with all these little shampoos and conditioners. It's free. Why not? Maybe it'll be useful. And it's so, but you really have to take that early step of saying, do I really want this? Do I really need it? Is it just going to take up space in my medicine cabinet or my closet or my kitchen cupboard? All those sauce packets that you get if you get takeout, takeout food. And when you start looking for opportunities to say no to things, you realize there are a lot of them, and it doesn't seem like it would make that much of a difference, but over time it really does. And it's, saves you time, saves you the energy of having to try to figure out what you're going to do with it down the road. Bigger purchases too. Do you really need more clothes? Shop your closet first. There are things you can do that really will help address the clutter problem and be more economical and also just better for the environment and society in general.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Mozaki. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I am an artist. My husband sort of considers me a hoarder. He can get through my house and my dishes are clean, but I paint and I quilt and I draw and I sew and I have canning stuff I've got stuff. I've probably got 5-6 times what the average person has, but it's because I do all of these things. I have trouble finding homes for things, permanent places to put them. and I have difficulty with storage. But if, you know, and but I worry, I'm getting a little bit older, and I worry about something happening to me, and then what's whoever's left taking care of it going to do with all of it?
Have you thought, Lisa, or have you looked for ways to curate a purge? And I know it might be hard, but deciding that some stuff has to go, even if it doesn't find a home?
Yes, I've actually pared down some of the things that I've done. Like, for instance, I can do probably 100 different crafts, but I've decided that, you know, maybe 5 of them are what I'm really interested in, and I've tried to let the rest of it go. But I have to bring myself back to that regularly, because my set point is to try to do everything.
Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Jennifer, that reminds me, this is that the thing where somebody we might look at and say is a hoarder, which we'll talk about that word in a bit, but also they might be an artist. There's a lot more to their story than that, as we just heard from Lisa.
Sure, absolutely. No, that really resonates with me. And, you know, if you're using your things and appreciating them, they're not really clutter, I don't think. I mean, clutter is chaotic, it's messy, it's kind of deprives it makes the things not really useful in the way they are. And it sounds like for someone like Lisa, who's actively creating and using things, you know, maybe there's sort of a, she can sort of think of her excesses. There might be other people out there who could use things, or she could kind of help circulate things. I don't know. It's I think there are some ways to make it less, make the amount of stuff seem less overwhelming. And if you're thinking about it in the first place, that's huge. That is I think it really sets someone who can handle their stuff apart from people who are just lost entirely in all their stuff.
Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story. We're talking to writer Jennifer Howard about her book, Clutter, An Untidy History, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story about clutter in your life, your relationship with your stuff, your kid's stuff, your parents' stuff, maybe, call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with writer and editor Jennifer Howard about her latest book, Clutter, An Untidy History. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with Marcus on the line in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, Rob. So my great aunt and uncle used to have a little wooden plaque in their house that said, creative clutter is far superior to idle neatness, and I completely agree. As for like what the guest was talking about before with, or you were saying with kids' pictures and stuff from the beach and whatever else, I like to do art in my free time. And so I started taking with my kids, we'll sit down and go through their pictures from school and whatever else. And then some of the stuff we may have picked up, rocks or shells or whatever at the beach. And then we try to either get a board or a shoebox or something, make some sort of diorama or some sort of other creation out of pictures that they pick. So that way they're having to kind of choose and go through like why they like this one or why I like this one. And then we kind of create something new. So then you add an extra layer of memory on top of it. And it's a great way to use up some of that stuff.
Interesting, Marcus. Thanks so much. What it's kind of shopping at home, Jennifer, and creatively repurposing the stuff that's around instead of just, I guess, storing it somewhere.
Yeah, no, that's lovely. I mean, that really shows you that objects can have a meaningful role in your life. You know, there's an active choice there to, and it gets, I love that Marcus is getting his children to think too about what matters to them and what they're, you know, how they can kind of work their important things into their lives instead of just having stuff pile up around them and not be appreciated. I think that's great.
Marcus, thanks a lot for that. Could have used that probably 15 years ago. We'll go next to Jamie in Middleton. Jamie, hi.
Hi, this is Jamie. I was just speaking to my parents are moving out of the house we grew up in, and so they've been there for 30 years, and their professions are a former art teacher and construction worker, and so with those careers come a lot of stuff. So we're finding it tough to get rid of and want to be mindful of how to recycle and not waste, but 30 years can be quite the accumulation.
Yeah. And now, Jamie, is there a sense that, hey, some of this stuff, I mean, construction worker, art teacher, they're going to have stuff that might be useful to somebody? Is that part of the stumbling block that they want to make sure they're not wasting something that somebody can make use of?
Yes. And obviously, it's a passion of both of theirs. And a lot of a lot of heart goes into the work, so you know what things are worth and all the different ideas you have with it. So yeah, definitely want to recycle and reuse and give it to someone else who might find use, but quite the process if it's not something you kind of keep up with and sort through as you go.
Jamie, thank you so much for sharing that. This is something, Jennifer, that a lot of people have been through, you to some extent with your mom's stuff. Like, some of this is going to end up in landfill, but maybe some of this has sentimental value for somebody. Waste not, want not. Maybe somebody could use this stuff. How much could that lead to keeping the clutter?
Well, I think that is a big part of it. People think, well, it's, you know, it's perfectly good. I don't want to throw it out, you know, and it could be useful someday. And the truth is, most of the time, it's not going to be useful. And if you really need that thing, you can probably borrow it or get it again. But the idea is it's much easier to let go of things if you can rehome them and you know that they're going to be used. They're not going to wind up in a landfill, especially when, as Lisa was describing, there are things that, you know, have to do with how you spend a lot of your life, your career, your family. And it takes a lot of work to do that kind of rehoming and donating. But if, especially living out of family house and try to help your parents deal with all of their things, it probably is worth the time if you can take the time, even though it is harder. You don't want to just pull up a dumpster and, you know, throw it all away. It's much easier to try to, ultimately it's more emotionally satisfying to let it go when you know it's going to have another life.
Thanks again for that call. Good luck to your parents as they make those decisions. We are talking to Jennifer Howard about her book, Clutter and Untidy History. Back to your calls now. Dave is with us in Kewaskum. Dave, hi.
Hey, yeah. So like that caller Lisa before, my dad was an artist growing up. So he always collected a bunch of what people call junk, you know, plastic tubes, stuff like that. And they always sort of rode that line of being hoarders. And then one day, between health issues and they got hold of that Marie Kondo book, they just went through and threw out everything. And they were very satisfied. They're very happy with where they are right now. But in the process, they threw out a lot of, you know, family heirlooms and stuff that was significant to the family. And we never really got an opportunity to go through it with them and point out what we would like to keep. And that sort of left an open wound in the family.
Wow. Dave, thanks for sharing that. I mean, did you come to terms with that? Did you talk to them about that, find out other ways to keep memories without the object?
Not really. I mean, we managed to salvage some family photos, but that's still sort of an ongoing thing.
Wow. Dave, thank you for sharing that. Jennifer, maybe this is another extreme. I don't know. Some people did want the stuff that was gotten rid of here.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a balance. You know, I think... especially when it's not just your stuff, but it's your family history, which especially with a family house, you know, and your parents have, I just went through all my elementary school papers that my parents had saved. And, you know, at least I got to make the decisions about that and got to relive some of the highs and lows of my, you know, my childhood. And I regret, one thing I really regret with my mother is that I didn't have a chance to sit down and hear her stories about her stuff. You know, I was flying in the dark basically when it came to what was important to her, or who this person in this photograph was, and it's a loss, you know. As the caller was just describing, it's almost like everything got taken away from you in a fire or a flood. You know, to have no say in how your what parts of your history you get to save, that's really traumatic. And ideally, if you have relatives who are downsizing, they will give you a chance to, you know, hear their stories and help you. Or you maybe let you help them make some choices about what to say and what might be meaningful to future generations. Because once that stuff is gone, it's gone.
Thanks, Dave, for sharing that with us. Sherry joins us now in Amherst. Sherry, hi.
Hi. My husband and I taught internationally for 32 years. And we traveled, and everywhere we went, we'd collect things. And then we'd come home and we'd store them away. And then we go to another location. And so now that we've retired, we've unpacked all this stuff. And we have a very cluttered house with stuff, beer steins, paintings from China, paper cuts, teapots, Saudi Arabian coffee pots, porcelain, and beer steins. And it goes on and on and on. And I'm trying to, and our children aren't interested. And so I'm trying to figure out where I could have these things settled, because it's not like something you would get at a thrift store, I don't think. course, my treasures. So I would love to know where I could actually take some of the stuff, because some of it is antiquities.
Sherry, thanks for the call. And this has got to be a common question. I bet a lot of people bring it up to you, Jennifer. This stuff is too good to just give away, but I don't know what to do with it.
Oh, it's so common, especially as with a lot of family furniture and things like that. And it sounds like the caller has a lot of interesting stuff collected from around the world. Honestly, it's good to be realistic about whether people really want to pay money for your things if you don't have family members who want them. A lot of people do have success with estate sales, and you don't have to die to have an estate sale. You can have a downsizing sale, and there are companies that will actually work with you, and they do take a percentage of the profits, but they can come in and they kind of look at what you have and put prices on it and advertise the sale. That could be potentially a useful option in that case. But sometimes you just have to let it go too, and to know when it's too much effort to try to sell it, and it's better to just find it a new home.
Well, thanks for all of your calls today, and Jennifer, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, and I loved all the calls. So many good stories.
Yeah. Jennifer Howard is a Washington, D.C.-based writer and editor. We've been talking about her latest book. It's called Clutter, An Untidy History. Still time for you to share your story, your thoughts on clutter in your own life or that of people you know. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.